Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Rajiv Escana for immigration.com, the law office of Rajiv Escana, PC. Today is Feb 28, 2013. This is a community conference call where the main purpose is to disseminate as much information as we can without creating an attorney-client relationship. So this call does not create that relationship. This is for information only. The call will be made publicly available. Your voice is being recorded, so if you speak, be aware of that. If you wish to hang up and not have your voice recorded or just to stay quiet, then please follow that impulse accordingly. Now, that said, let me just first get started as I usually do. First, I will deal with the questions that have been posted on the forums. And then I have a gentleman by the name of Sam who's been corresponding with me, and I had asked him to just join in the conference call. And at the end of it, we will deal with new issues. Okay? So first the posted questions, then any follow-ups on that, I forgot about that, then Sam, and then other issues. Okay, first question is from Raghu2082. Usage of AVR, automatic visa revalidation. So the question is, we have used AVR, which basically means went to Canada, we will not get a new I-94 because it's for less than 30 days. Now the question is, when I re-enter USA using automatic visa revalidation from Canada, am I entering? In other words, when I fill out form I-765, should I say the date I entered from Canada as my last date or the date prior to that? And the answer is, your entry from Canada is still an entry, so you should use that. Okay? You should use that, the date you entered from Canada, as the date of your last entry. Don't worry too much about the fact that the I-94 was issued before then. Okay? Next question is Tider, who says, will H-1 extension work for a visa for another company? He was working in USA from 2009 to 12 on an H-1B for company A. Then got an extension, which is good till 2014. Left USA in Jan 2012 and joined another company. Well, he had joined another company in September. Later in that year, I guess, he joined another company B in September. So he left USA in Jan 2012 and joined another company in September 2012. Now, I'm not sure where this company B is located that you joined in September 2012, whether it is in India or whether it is in USA. Company C in USA wants to hire me, and he wants to work for them. The CHR attorney are suggesting me to join their Indian office, and then they'll get an L1. Now, I'm not employed by C yet, nor by their Indian office. Will they be able to get me on L1? And the answer is no. You need to be employed with them for at least 1 year outside USA. Now that I already have an H-1 extension until August 2014 with company A as a petitioner, can I go for visa stamping with a new invitation letter from Company C? No, that's not the way it works. Company C will have to process your H-1 again. Okay? You can't just go for it with an invitation letter. And you are right. This is number C. What you've said is the best way I see is that Company C should be filing a new H-1, which is not subject to the quota. And the answer is yes. You are correct. That's what you should be doing. Chris 0312 says, what is the approximate wait time for I-130 petition for a spouse for versus K-3 petition? Well, what you can do is, let me show you. You can go to immigration.com. Okay? So if you go to immigration.com and you go to processing times and status checks, okay, and what I'm doing is I'm actually, it's on the screen. You are just able to hear my voice, but it's on the screen. When you go to our processing times and status checks page, when you watch the video, it'll be clear. You will go to service center processing times, okay? And this is where all the processing times are. You can click on this link. So these are all the processing times, field offices all over the United States, service centers. So you can check the processing times from here. Normally, I-130s tend to take a little bit longer. However, one of our clients showed me that even right now, even K-1s are taking a long time, almost 6 months to process. So K-1, K-3 should be about the same neighborhood. Okay. So I just showed you where to go for processing time checks, and these are approximate. Next question, IV rub, L1 and H1 visa. I'm employed with an employer who's willing to sponsor L1, employer A who wants to do L1. Employer B has offered H1B, and April is around the corner. L1 filing from A would take time. If I allow A and B to file respectively for L and H1B, will there be any issues? Well, that, first of all, it depends upon whether you are inside USA or outside USA. It's difficult for me to comment in the abstract, but I need to know whether you are inside USA or outside USA, whether you'll be doing change of status or you'll be applying through consular processing. But it is possible to do both at the same time, keeping in mind there are certain things that could be problematic if you are inside USA. So whichever gets approved last could potentially be your status. Okay. If I allow A and B to file respectively for L1, H1, okay, will A know I have applied for H1B? I don't know. Look at the form I-129. It should answer all your questions, whether they have to disclose any other filings. I don't think so, but you can double check. Okay. If H1B is approved, what is the validity of my L1? What you can do is, you can apply for H1 with consular processing option instead of change of status. If you do that, then your L1 remains valid. If you don't do that and the H1B gets approved with a change of status, now you're in H1B status, you cannot work on L1. To restore L1 back, you will have to either go outside USA, come back in using L1 stamp, or apply for L1B. L1 change of status again from H1 to L1. Okay, so there's a difference between change of status, which occurs within USA, and visa stamping, for which you have to do an extra effort and go outside USA. Okay, so when I apply for H1B, I can do one of the two things. If I'm inside USA, I can do L1 or H1B with change of status or without change of status. If I do it with change of status, I will get that status automatically in USA. If I do it without change of status, I'll have to go outside for a visa stamping before I get into that status. So I could get an L1 approval but not change of status. That might be one way to do it. Okay. Sanshi wants to know visa refusal for youngsters. Well, they have been denied tourist visa on several occasions. Okay. At least twice. So the question is, how do I get here? I have started my own business. I am unmarried. Can I get the U.S. visa? Look, if you've been denied twice, it's very unlikely you are going to be able to get a U.S. visa. Not a tourist visa. However, an L1 or an H1, those are different options. Those are pretty good. Okay? So no one can help you get a U.S. tourist visa. Really, it's very difficult. Okay? Next question, Sihala. OBGYN specialist, MBBS plus 5 years plus 1 year internship plus 3 years of MD residency, and more than 12 years of clinical experience in India. So apparently we spoke on 31st January regarding EB2 eligibility with advanced degree, and one more issue on J1. You said I might be eligible to apply for EB2 category, but I have to wait for a few months as there may be changes in the laws. Well, first of all, I don't remember the conversation, Doc, but I'm not anticipating that necessarily the criteria would change that quickly. So really, our hope for a quick resolution has been dashed because you have House holding its own hearings, Senate holding its own hearings on immigration laws, and White House has its own version of immigration law. So I don't know how long they will take to decide when the laws are going to change. So I am not sure exactly what we are waiting for, but what you should do, Doc, is go ahead and apply for your, if you're not qualified, here's what I would do. I would file your application in such a way that if the EB2 is not available, at least EB3 is there, because that way you get your priority date. And if the laws change, you can take advantage of that, hopefully. So go ahead and start your green card at this time. I don't think anything is going to happen overnight. Uday01 says, my wife's current AP expires July 8th, and we'll be applying for a new AP. Can she travel on a current AP even if the new one is not received yet and come back on the new one? It's very complicated, okay? This is the way the law appears to be. Now, the reason I say appears to be, I have not seen anything in writing from USCIS, but they have stated this in some AILA, American Immigration Lawyers Association meetings. This is what they say. First of all, you have to be in USA to file advanced parole. You cannot be outside USA. Second, to enter USA, you need a valid advanced parole or a visa, H1L1 visa or H4L2 visa. Third, if you apply for an advanced parole and leave USA, as long as you can enter on the validity of the old AP, they will allow you to use the advanced parole that was not approved when you left, but it was filed already. So the idea is the old advanced parole must be valid for reentry if you have applied for another advanced parole. Okay. This is iffy. I tell my clients, look, if you don't want to take a chance, stick on until you get the new advanced parole approval. Take both of them with you. I think that's the safest thing to do, because there's some discrepancy in the way CBP is looking at it and the way USCIS is looking at it. Really very, very uncertain. Although I have clients who have used this method where they left USA when their second advance parole was pending and came back using the old advance parole, which was still valid. But it is quite certain that they will not allow you to enter if your old advance parole has expired while you were outside USA and you are trying to use the new one to come back in. Okay? I hope I've made myself clear. Next question is Uday01. I joined Company A on EB3 EAD from my previous company. So what needs to be considered if my current Company A has to apply for EB2 labor? That's not a question I can answer. That would require several hours of going over your paperwork about what needs to be considered. How different should the job profile or additional responsibilities be? Impossible to answer. Too many issues. When can I move to that position, after approval of labor or I-140 approval? I prefer I-140 approval. Is there risk in doing so? No. As long as it is done in good faith, there is very little risk. Will the new immigration law, which the Congress is discussing, well, there are three versions of it, so I don't know which one we are talking about. One thing I have seen that makes me feel good is that there is a nod from everybody on the fact that legal immigration needs some reform, and people who are waiting 10, 11 years to get their green cards or companies who are struggling with the H-1 issues and L-1 issues, they need some help from the government. So that seems to be a common theme as to what to do with illegal immigration. That's the bone of contention right now. So we'll see how it works out. I cannot really predict what the laws are going to be. Deepak.K came to USA on H-1B, seventh-year extension based on I-140 of Company A. When he was in India, he got a 221G. That went back, got reaffirmed. Now he got a 221G again. And this time they've canceled the visa, they've canceled B-1, and they have sent a revocation letter again about the employer-employee relationship. So the second time the case had been sent for revocation. Wife is working in USA on H-1B through another employer. Okay. In case I want to work again in USA, what are my options? You have your approved I-140 application. Well, what you can do is you can apply for an H-4 visa to come back into USA and a few months later convert back to H-1. That appears to be the best option. Okay. Because Patel says, I got laid off on Monday from a full-time H-1B position, what are my options to continue to stay in U.S.? Well, the best thing you can do is go to the forums, go to advanced search. I'm showing you on the screen. Go to advanced search. Wow. These forums are slow. Okay. And click on blog entries. You want to search in the blog entries. And search for the words laid off. I have written an article. Do a search, advanced search for the words laid off. Oh no, this is wrong. I did something wrong. Blog entries. Oh, you have to click on single content type, search blog entries, keywords, laid off. Okay, let's see if that shows up, that article shows up. Let's see. Here it is. This article, laid off, now what? Okay. So read up on this. Essentially, what happens is this article deals with layoffs on various, you know, on various statuses. If you're an H-1 holder, what happens? L-1 holder, what happens? So read this article. Now, bottom line, if you get laid off and you're still getting paid till March 15th, you're probably okay to stay till March 15th. But after that, you are not. If the second company files your H-1B and it's received by USCIS before March 15th, you're okay. If your H-1B gets rejected, you are not unlawfully present because if your application for transfer or extension is filed before the current one expires, then you are in authorized period of stay even after your current H-1 is revoked or is over. Authorized period of stay. From the date the second case is rejected, you will then be unlawfully present and out of status. So you can then leave within a reasonable period of time, 10, 15, 20 days, okay? There's really not... If you're not legal during those 10, 15, 20 days, but USCIS is likely to accept that as a reasonable period to depart. GLAD 2000. Question regarding employer-based green card. I work for an this is a little garbled. There's a location XYZ for job. The employer should have the ability to pay and the intent to hire until employee receives a green card. Employer should have the ability to hire at the same location. That is correct. You know that this may not be easy since priority date takes several years. Location can change. Well, you know the way it works is when we file cases where not only we, I mean everybody, all immigration lawyers, where movement is possible, we always file from the corporate headquarters. And that's been a very tricky issue. So far, it's been working okay. Anytime, it could become a major problem. But right now, people who are frequently relocated should be filing from the corporate headquarters. So it doesn't matter how many times you move. As long as the headquarters remains, you're fine. Okay, so location should not matter. Dame wants to know, my employer has applied for EB-2 to EB-2 porting. EB-2 got retrogressed. So the question is, can I have both an EB-3 and EB-2 case survive and choose one or the other? Sure, you can. You can, as long as both job offers are valid and available, definitely. Malan Manaka says, India travel. Currently, I'm on L1A with employer A. Visa is good till June 2014. So the question is, if I change to H1 while my wife is outside USA, can she come back on L2? No, because if you convert to H1, from the date you convert it to H1, change status to H1, she can no longer use L2 because you are not on L1 any longer. So she'll have to come on H4. Okay. But if your H-1B is approved and will be activated in October, she can come back on L2, and you can apply for her H-4 once she comes in. Next question is from MTA, who wants to know, look, my I-140 was denied because we didn't have the 2012 tax returns. Now we have the 2012 tax returns. Should we do an MTR, or should we do something else? Well, or apply a new I-140. I probably would file for a new I-140 and try to do it premium, okay? Because you can take the position that the original labor certification is still with USCIS, so they might accept the case premium processing. That's probably what I would do. You can do both. You can also do an MTR if you like. So sometimes I would do both. It depends. Whichever comes first, good for us. Next question, the last question from Gracio, remote work on TN status. So the idea here is they want to work in the United States for a company that's not in the United States. So a Canadian company is going to have him work or her work on a TN in USA. I don't think that can be done. I would have to look at the law very carefully, but I don't see how you can do that. For TN, you have to have a job offer in USA, I guess from a U.S. employer. I'm sorry. I cannot absolutely with certainty tell you that this is the right answer. We can look up the law for you if you want to make an appointment for some kind of a research assignment for us. But, I think it's not likely to work. That's my first instinct. Just to be 100% certain, I would have to spend some time on the books, or one of my team members would have to. Okay? Now, that said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to open the floor to those people who have follow-up questions on what we have just discussed. So if you have posted and you have a follow-up question, please press 5-star on your phone. 5-star. Press 5-star on your phone. 1, 2, 3, 4. Let's see how many questions there are. 5 questions. Okay, let's get started with the one who logged in the first in time. Area code 862, can you hear me? Hang on 1 second. Can you speak up a little bit? I cannot hear you. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, 862, go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. This is 2082 about the AVR question.
AVR question, okay.
You mentioned that I have to state the date of arrival from Canada as the last date. And
that is correct. You should be stating the date from Canada as the date of entry.
So what about the other, in the form, 765 form, they have an option where you have to also specify the alien number and or the I-94 number.
I cannot assist in filling forms. I've said this before. For the simple reason, if you look at the bottom of the form, it says whoever has helped you fill the form, they should be signing at the bottom of it. And since I won't be doing it, it's not really appropriate for me to answer those kind of questions. But suffice it to say, what I just told you is the right thing to do. Okay?
Okay, sir.
So
okay.
Even if you, even if government asks you at any time what your I-94 number is, that's fine. You can give the old I-94 number and give the date of entry as the date you entered from Canada. That's the right thing to do.
Okay, sir. I have one follow-up other question. If I were to, I have my green card processed from another law firm in New York. If I were to file the extension from your law firm, will you also just file the extensions?
File the extension of what, the 765?
Of EAD and advance payroll, sir.
Okay. Can I tell you something, and this may not be...
right.
Why would you want to hire a lawyer for a one-page form? It's really easy. If you get into any problem, call
right.
me. Okay? I would be happy to take your money, but it's a waste of money. If I were in your situation, and I'm a very careful person, I will do it myself.
Right.
As long as you are doing it completely truthfully, and I've already given you the guidelines, why do you
right.
want to hire me? I think it's a waste of your money, sir.
I completely understand, so thank you so much. But because I sort of missed the point that you mentioned about the I-94 because of my phone problem. I think it was...
Let me put you this I'll say it again. If the government ever asks you about your I-94 number, you'll give the old I-94. That is your
I-94.
You can't make one up, right?
Right. That's right. Absolutely correct. Yes.
If the government asks you about your date of entry, last entry, it will be the date from Canada. No problem.
Okay. Okay, but they will be different, though, because I don't have a 994, corresponding I-94 when I enter.
You don't have to have an I-94. That's the whole point of AVR. You re-enter using
right.
your I-94, the old I-94.
Okay.
You're
okay, so thank you so much.
Perfectly okay.
Okay.
Don't worry about it. Don't.
Okay.
If there was a problem, if I saw any problem, I would say, you know what, don't do it yourself. Let me take care of this or let your lawyers take care of it. Trust me.
Right.
I don't give, you know, irresponsible advice.
Okay, sir. Okay, sir. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Let's see. Area code 508. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv, sir. This is Deepak. You just told me about, converting my H4 to H1. I'm already in U.S. right now on H4. And, I have a 2 question right now. Should I go for a change of status, H-1B, on April 1st? Or should I go on H-1B change of status using I-140?
One second. Deepakji, you are the one who got 2 denials, right?
One was rejection and one was revocation.
Basically 2 denials.
221.
Right. So you are now in USA. You are now in USA
right.
on H-4. Okay?
Right.
Oh, yes. Sorry, I missed that part. You have said that. What are my options? So the option is you should apply for an H-1. Because you have an I-140 approval, you can get a 3-year H-1 extension anyway.
Okay.
That I-140 has not been revoked, right? It's still good?
No, it has not been revoked.
You can use that to get a 3-year extension for any company.
Sir, I have one more question then. Like, if I use that I-140, will my previous employer know about it that, I have used I-140 and no longer, want to continue with them?
They will not. There is
they
no process under which they can know.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. We have 3 more questions, so... Then we'll get to Sam and then general questions. Area code 571, go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi. My name is Surender. My wife went to India in 2011 for her H-1 visa, but her H-1 visa got rejected for misrepresentation. So we applied for her H-4.
One second.
Sorry.
You have a new question, right? Not an old question?
Yeah, it's a new question.
You'll have to wait. I'll get to you, okay?
Oh, okay.
Area code 903.
Yes, sir. This is Vikash One. Can I know that if my employer revokes H-1B before my new employer files H-1B transfer, these days I'm staying in U.S., will those be legal or not before March 15?
Then, see, once your, Vikash ji, once your H-1 is revoked, you start accruing, probably, there is a little doubt on that, unlawful presence. Which means if you continue to stay here for 180 days, you will be barred from entering USA for 3 years. If you stay here for less than 180 days, you're still unlawfully present, but it does not cause you any permanent harm.
Okay. I'm just planning till March 15.
Might increase your chances of visas like B1 and F1 and B2 tourist visas, etc. But it does not harm H1 or green card staff.
Okay. And how do I know my current employer would have revoked? Like, is there any way to know, like, whether he revoked so-and-so day or something like that?
This is the bad part of the system. There is no way for you to know unless you talk with the employer and they give you truthful information.
Okay. Last question, sir. After LCA, and how many, like, should I wait for H-1 transfer or it can be done immediately?
You can join immediately.
Okay. And, I believe I'm in safe hands till March 15, whatever happens. I can stay here till March 15 because my payrolls are generating, right?
It looks like it. There is some debate about whether just getting paid and not working actually keeps you in status. But so far, USCIS has not created a problem. They just look at the pay stuff.
I see. All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck, sir. Area code 510, go ahead, please.
Hello, sir. This is Sam. I sent you an email with my question.
Sam, you have to wait, I told you. Just a
okay,
time.
Yeah.
I'll get
sure.
To
you. Thank you.
Area code 312, go ahead, please.
Yes, please. Hi, Rajiv. I submitted my N-400 for citizenship. I'm still waiting for my interview. I think that there's some delay in Chicago.
One second. I'm not dealing with new questions right now. Let me just first deal with questions that have been posted. Hang on. I'll be right back.
Okay.
All right. So I take it there are no follow-up questions on what has already been posted. If there are no follow-up questions, I'm now opening us for any new questions. Three people I already have. I have Surinder, I have the lady from Area Code 312, and I have Sam. Any other new questions? Press 5-star. Any new questions? Okay, good. Let me start with Sam first. Sam, go ahead. What was your question? What is the issue? Remind me.
Hello, sir. My EB3 was filed in 2003, and I have 485 filed in 2004. And because of the backlog, we filed for EB2 petition again, and I got my labor approved in August last year, and then my 140 was filed in October, end of October, and the employer and attorney say they don't have both the receipt notice and approval notice so far. But the system, online system, says that, you know, the petition has been approved on November 8th. Which my attorney is not willing to believe. So, but the attorney, they called up USCIS yesterday and they are saying the case has been approved, but we don't know if the petition has captured the priority date from my previous petition application. So given this, what are my options and how do I go about adjudicating 485?
Okay, well, it looks like you have two sub-issues, Sam. One of your issues is, how do I get a copy of my I-140 approval, right?
Right.
For that, your attorneys can file. If it is lost in mail, there are some procedures available. They can do some formal request with USCIS. They can also file form I-824 to request a second copy of the approval notice. As far as transfer of priority date is concerned, don't worry. Many times, in fact, most times, your priority date is not listed as the old date on the new I-140. However, you are entitled to the old priority date. When the old priority date becomes current, you can definitely get on the phone and ask the USCIS to make sure that your case gets adjudicated. What happens is, for the last couple of years, USCIS has been doing periodic sweeps of their database. So when they see you with two priority dates, they will automatically give you the earliest one. So they automatically do it. They're supposed to do it every few days. They do a sweep of their database, and they assign the correct priority date to the file. It may not show up on your notice, but it's there on your computer file.
Okay.
And you can confirm this actually through, if I remember, I think in our office we did that a couple of times. You call the customer service and you ask them to confirm the priority date of the petition.
So they'll give that information to me if I call the customer service?
I think they can.
Okay.
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 Actually, we have a few minutes. Check with your lawyers. I mean, I was going to ask somebody in our office, but I'll have to get off the line and do it. Just check with your, I'm pretty sure, just go ahead and give them a call and see if they can
Okay.
the priority date. Also, if things become difficult, just contact the ombudsman's office. USCIS ombudsman is pretty effective in these cases.
Okay.
Tell them to confirm for you which is your priority date.
Okay, and
don't worry, it happens automatically. They will take care of it.
Okay.
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 Good luck, Sam.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Okay, ma'am, I'll get to you one more question, then I'll get to you. Surinder, go ahead, please. Surinder ji?
Yeah. Hi, Rajiv. Yeah, my wife was an H-1 year. So she went to India in 2011 April for her H-1B stamping, but it was rejected, and it was rejected for misrepresentation. So we went for our H-4, then we applied for our H-4 in July, but then they said, embassy people said you have to apply for a waiver. So we applied for the waiver.
A 212D waiver.
Yeah, 212D waiver, non-withdrawal, 212D waiver. And finally it was approved in January. So she was here, now she is here in U.S. She came to here. Now she is on H-4 visa. So now my question is, can she apply for H-1 again for this April? For this
Well, there are a couple of separate issues here. First of all, a misrepresentation is a permanent bar against immigration into U.S. Permanent.
Oh, permanent.
Very difficult to waive that bar. If you become a U.S. permanent resident or citizen and you can show that there's some extreme and exceptional hardship, you might be able to get a waiver. But misrepresentation bars are very, very difficult. And if I remember 212D3 procedures off the top of my head, I believe it is given for only one particular entry for that visa. So each time you have to do another entry or another visa, you may require a new 212D3 waiver. I don't remember the details of the law off the top of my head. So, but don't think of it as given for granted that you're going to be able to get your H-1 without another waiver. Double check. In fact, the waiver itself should contain language that tells you what the limits and what the parameters of the waiver are. So this will need a little bit more digging up. But remember, she's not going to be able to get her green card.
Yeah, attorney told us that she won't get green card, but at that time she said, like, we can apply for her H-1, like that she said. She can get her H-1. So without applying, yeah.
Why don't you contact the same lawyers since they have the case and they have the waiver in front of them? Have them double-check it. Maybe they can guide you better than I can.
Okay. And one more question, like, how can we check, like, how much bar is it? Like, you are saying permanent. So can we check if is it permanent or 5 or 10 years bar?
It's by law permanent bar.
Oh, if it's a permanent, if it's a 212D?
Yes. Whenever somebody obtains or attempts to obtain a U.S. immigration benefit by fraud or misrepresentation, it's a permanent bar.
So it's a permanent bar.
Yes, sir.
So she can stay on H-4, but if she wants to change the status, we have to again apply for a waiver.
I don't know that for sure. I'll have to look at the waiver itself, but that may be the case.
Oh.
All right?
Okay. Yeah, thank you. One more question.
Yeah.
Hi. I'm Surinder's friend. I have one question.
One second. It's only fair that I take the lady who's been waiting for a while. I'll get back with you, okay?
Okay, no problem. I will wait. Thank you.
One second.
Hi, Rachi.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
So,
naturalization issue, go ahead.
Yes. I filed my N-400. I'm waiting for the interview. Already got my fingerprint done. So my parents are in the U.S. Their B-2 visa will expire in early April. I kind of don't want them to get out of status before applying for their green card. So I'm thinking, is it possible, if I'm lucky enough to get the interview in March, to request a, you know, same-day ceremony? But at that time, they probably won't have my citizenship certificate ready right there and then. They probably will mail it to me. So after the oath ceremony, am I technically a U.S. citizen? Could I file for their I-130 and I-485 and then submit the certificate of citizenship after I receive it later on? Would that cause any problem?
Legally speaking, the moment you take the oath, you are a U.S. citizen, okay? The certificate of naturalization is merely evidence of citizenship, evidence of naturalization, okay? However, as a practical matter, they ask for things like the certificate number, et cetera, on the paperwork that you file. I don't think you're going to have a situation where there's a gap between oath and delivery of the naturalization certificate. I haven't done one of these things in many years. Okay. After my own, we mostly represent people by mail. So I don't really know what the local procedure in your particular area is. But here's what I do recommend. What you can do is you can apply for their extension. Apply for extension of their status. And be truthful about it. Say, I want an extension because I don't want them to go back. I want them to do their green card here. Okay? And I'm getting natural. What, sir, can you please keep it down? I'm trying. I have you on the open line. So, ma'am, what you do is apply for an extension of their status and make it clear to the government why you're asking for it. By the time
okay. Well, sorry. Actually, I neglect to mention that they already applied for the extensions. Can they apply for another time, another extension?
Okay. Is an extension pending right now?
No. They already granted the extension till early April. So they already got another 6 months. So they'll be here for a total of 12 months on B2 visa by early April.
You can file another extension.
Oh, you can? Okay.
We have cases. I'll give you an example. Sometimes people cannot qualify for example, H-4. I'll give you an example of a physician whose parents are old and, you know, they're not doing well physically. They're not entitled to H-4. The physician is on H-1. Parents are not entitled to H-4. But we are doing tourist visa extensions for the last 2.5 years. It is allowed in cases like this to use B in lieu of H visa. So, in other words, there is no law that says you can't ask for another extension. Be truthful about it. Just say why you need it. By the time they decide that, you'll be a naturalized citizen already.
Mm-hmm. So basically what you're saying, after you file the extension, then they technically won't accumulate any unlawful presence, right?
That is correct.
Okay.
Let me also add one more thing for your education. immediate relatives of U.S. citizens, such as parents and spouses, even if they have accumulated 300 years of unlawful presence, they can get their green card without any problem as long as they have not traveled outside U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So if your parents, the worst case scenario, your parents have been here 5 years without, after their I-94 expired, and you got your naturalization and now you applied for their green card, they will get their green card in USA as long as they have not traveled before getting their green card. No problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got you. Could they, just two very quick follow-up, could they, after they file for their I-485 here, can they apply for an advanced parole to travel outside?
Absolutely, they can. And as long as they have not accumulated any unlawful presence, you have to watch that carefully. Mm-hmm. There's no problem in traveling.
Okay, great. Now, lastly, I understand that my local office has a backlog, so they may not be conducting any, oath ceremony in March. Would I be able to request an oath ceremony with a local immigration court, or do you think that's actually also a long wait, so shouldn't bother with it?
I don't know. I would certainly want you to look into it, and the best way to do that is just contact your congressman's office.
Okay. Okay. Great.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much, Rajiv.
Okay, friend, go ahead, please.
Hi. Yeah. This is Sridhar. My employer is not giving me I-140 approval copy. So how to get my I-140 approval copy?
See, what we have had people do is file a Freedom of Information Act request.
Okay.
So if you just go to, I'm doing it on my screen, uscis.gov,
mm-hmm.
and you click on the forms,
mm-hmm.
I'm clicking on the forms, and do a search on the page for the word FOIA, F-O-I-A. No? Okay, how about freedom? Yeah, it's form G-639. G as in girl, 639.
Yeah. Okay.
File a Freedom of Information Act slash Privacy Act request. I know many people who got their copies of their approval notices like that.
Okay. So
worth a try.
You.
Okay.
Yeah. Basically, what I have to mention in that, I want approval copy and that's it.
Basically, the way it works is you ask for whatever documents you want. You can give a bunch of documents, or you can even ask for all immigration-related documents that they have on you.
So that I need to notarize anything, or I need to look at
the form. It's not that complicated to fill out. So look at the form. I don't know the answer to all that.
Okay. Thank you.
Good luck, sir.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
How much time will it take? Sorry, one more question. How much time it will take?
They are supposed to respond within 20 days, I think, but I don't know how long they will take.
Okay.
All right?
Thank you.
Good luck to you.
Thank you.
All right, folks, before we close, anybody has any questions, press 5-star. Any questions whatsoever? One? Okay. All right, the last question of the day then. Area code 508. Go ahead.
Hi, Rajesh sir. This is Deepak again. My H-1B 221G problem.
I remember.
I have one more question. Let's say I'm giving you one scenario. Let's say, instead of using
Let me stop you for a second. We just put out an app for iPhones and iPads yesterday. Okay?
Okay.
Please spread the word amongst our own community. We put out an app.
Sure.
What you do is you go to the iTunes and just type Rajiv, R-A-J-I-V. Type Rajiv, R-A-J-I-V, and the app will pull up. The app is called immigration.com mobile app. So just, download that. Let us know what your feedback on that is, and we will appreciate comments as well as, whatever ratings you feel we deserve. The best part about that app is that I can send you oral messages. So whenever something new comes up, I just immediately you know, speak into my iPhone or my iPad, and I click send, and you get a copy of that right away. I think that's very useful. But go ahead.
So, sir, scenario is, let's say, you know, instead of using my I-140, I go with a, you know, new H-1B change up status from H-4 to H-1B through another new employer in April, on April 1st. And in meantime, I join my old employer, you know, based on that I-140 approval. And later in October,
Hang on. You cannot join an employer based upon I-140. You need H-1.
Right. My old employer is ready to file H-1, but I am hesitant to join them because it's because of them I, you know, got stuck into 221G, and I have suffered for almost 1 year. So I want to go with a new employer without using my I-140 on April 1st. And in meantime, let's say, you know, if I want to start working like for 3-4 months, I join my old employer again through I-140 and H-1B approval that they filed. So later in a year, when October 1st comes, can I simply join to a new employer?
I think you are confused. Okay? You are either subject to the quota or you are not. The I-140 does not take you out of the quota.
Okay.
Okay. If you are subject to the quota, just having an I-140 approval does not take you out.
Okay.
I-140 approval merely gives you the right to extend for 3 years. Okay. Now, if you are subject to the quota, I can't think of a reason why you would be subject to a quota if you have an I-140 approval and you had an H-1 before. I guess you could become subject to the quota if you were outside USA for 1 year. By the way, how long were you outside USA when the 222G was going on?
More than a year, sir.
More than a year. If you're outside more than a year, you could conceivably become subject to the quota, but you're not looking for 3 new years. You're looking for 3 years based upon the I-140 approval. In my view, you are not subject to the quota.
Okay.
Okay, when you use the I-140 to extend your H-1. Because your source of 3 years is not the new 6 years, but that 3 years which you get because of the I-140 approval. That's what it looks like to me. It's an interesting question of law. Okay?
Okay. All right.
Good luck.
Thank you.
All right, guys, there's one more question. I will not have time to do any more. I'll take one more, and then we'll call it a day. I'll be back in 2 weeks. We can talk again. Area code 903, go ahead, please.
Yeah, this is Vikas 1. I got laid up 2 days prior, and my last pay stub would be March 15. My question is, current time right now, today, am I out of status, unlawful, lawful status, or what is it?
Well, you said you're getting paid, right?
Yes.
Okay. If I were to make a guess, I would say you are still in good stead. Okay? Because no matter what USCIS says, you're not really just sitting around. You're getting, let me rephrase that. You're not really violating your status as long as you're getting paid. Okay? But there is some debate about that. You're definitely not unlawful. Unlawfully present is when your I-94 expires or perhaps when your I-140 gets revoked. Before that, you may be out of status, but you're not unlawful. And in my view, you're not out of status until you're getting paid.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you. Yeah.
Good luck. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, everyone, for being here, and I'll see you again in 2 weeks.